This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to your home for everything. We mean everything. Sports. Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. I'm your co-host, Scott Friscola. We are deep in the throes of a lot of hoops, people playing for free and for pay. Of course, the NBA All-Star break is past from up in Toronto, and the second half has begun in earnest, and we have one of our experts from the old guard joining us this evening, and of course, college hoops rampant as well, and I know my co-host this evening, hard to talk about in terms of college hoops, and he's not only not feeling well, and I applaud him very much for his yeoman's work tonight, but a tough loss for our beloved Friars, the Cowboy, Roger Morissette.
Hey, Scott.
How are you?
Yes, tough loss for the Friars. You know, I feel like the Friars played tonight, so I'm a little bit under the weather. Seniors also, senior didn't even make it. He's
no.
So under the weather, so I apologize, Grant, for your first time on the show that you're getting about 40% of standard post here.
I will be judging you.
The gentleman that is talking right now for you Extra Point listeners, obviously, hopefully you listen to both Extra Point and the Sports Lounge, but for those Extra Point listeners, you know that voice. Pleasure to have him on his Sports Evolution debut. We'll talk the second half of the NBA season, talk a little about what happened in the first half, etc. He is one of the big, if not the big, NBA writer for Bleacher Report, Mr. Grant Hughes. Grant, welcome back.
Oh, thank you for having me. So if this is the Sports Lounge, I guess I should be just way more casual, right? Like, that's the way it needs to go.
Well, their show used to be called, Roger's show used to be called the Sports Lounge, and then, of course, you were on the Extra Point, and we kind of morphed it into one flame-throwing, you know, powerhouse heavyweight champion. So it is called the XP Lounge. So you could sit back casually. Don't worry about Roger's inhaler of medicine. He's fine. There's plenty of
the sports lounge was very, very casual, Grant.
Yeah.
Really, okay.
Extremely. Yes. But it's a pleasure to have you on, Grant, and it's good to have you on your debut edition here on the Big Flamethrower, the Sports Evolution. I was going to thought we were going to talk about many topics this evening, including I got a quick college note. I don't know if you're checking one of our chats, Cowboy, but JR just said that Arizona State's playing Utah tonight. Utah has a 30-2 lead. Eeks. Kind of sounded like – felt like Providence was down 30-2 at one point this evening.
Yeah, I know, but BC the other night was down.
Yeah, they were down
31-4 to Wake Forest.
Yeah, and Wake Forest is awful. So
sometimes teams just stink, Scott.
Yeah, it is. Arizona State's having a rough year. BC's having a terrible year as well. Just like my Lakers, Grant, are having an atrocious year. But we'll talk about them in a minute. As mentioned, the All-Star break has passed. We have left Toronto. Quick thought, what were your thoughts on the All-Star weekend in general?
The game itself was terrible, and I think that's kind of the consensus.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the...
So they scored like 480 points or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, like, I mean, it was just one of those... It was like a caricature of how that game usually is. You know, nobody plays defense. Nobody's trying to get hurt. You know, one or two guys really go out there gunning to try to score 40, which in this case was Paul George and Russ Westbrook. But I mean, it was the worst in terms of effort that I've seen in a really long time, and that sucked because... The All-Star Saturday night stuff, the dunk contest, the three-point contest, even the skills thing, those were awesome. Those were as good as they've been in years. But the game itself was just a total clunker.
Yeah. I believe the final was 196-173. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not a basketball game. They're messing around. It's
no.
It's just something totally different.
It's a glorified scrimmage is pretty much.
Yeah. Usually they at least crank it up a little bit on the defensive end toward the end to try to win the game, but we didn't didn't even get that. It seems
that's
like
right.
They were just actively trying to get the first All-Star game where a team scored 200 points.
Well, and the thing was, you know, you're totally right. There usually is a stretch there at the end where both teams start to try, but that stretch lasted like the last 40 seconds of the game because Paul George was like a point away from setting the All-Star game scoring record. I think he had 41 and Wilt Chamberlain had 42, and the West decided, you know, way at the very end, like, we're going to put three guys on him and just make sure that doesn't happen. So that was the extent of the defense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what did you think of last year's – I wonder if I'm pretty sure I mentioned this to you last year, but just to recap. I kind of dug the whole Brooklyn, New York, like the Garden, Barclays split. I thought that was kind of neat. I wonder if that's something they should do more often when they're really close. I mean, there's not a lot of cases where that can happen, but I thought that was kind of a unique situation last year to have – you know, two venues for one weekend, but I guess you can't really do that too often because there's not a lot of teams that close. So, but we leave Toronto and we begin the second half. Quick thoughts, Grant, on the first half of the season. Of course, the big stories, the two powerhouses in the West, the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs, just mowing through everybody. That's a big story. The East, I want to say mediocrity. That's not the right term. Parity, probably. There's a lot of teams that are really good, but maybe going into the break, I don't think there's one East team that could touch either the Warriors or the Spurs. But overall, your thoughts on the first half of the year?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first thing you said. It's this year has been defined by the Warriors and sort of more quietly, but almost to the same extent, the Spurs just being, you know, I mean, these are two teams on historic paces. The Warriors were the fastest of 50 wins ever. The Spurs are on pace to have the highest margin of victory ever on average. And so with these two teams, you've got a bunch of other really good teams. Like the Cavs are good, very good. The Thunder are very good. Those are probably your third and fourth best teams in the league. But really at this point, what the Spurs and Warriors have done is kind of set this weird standard where it's just a different, we're judging teams differently this year because those two teams are so good. Mm-hmm. And everybody else, like you look at the trade deadline, just as an example, in a lot of years, you'd have, you know, some of those second tier teams really trying to make a push to get that one last guy to put them over the top. But basically everybody kind of said, screw it. What's the point? We're not going to compromise our future because this just isn't our year. I really think that's the pervasive thought right now after the first half is that we, you know, as a league, there are 28 teams that it doesn't matter how good they are because there are two that are just that great.
Mm. Hey, Grant, so obviously, I mean, you say the Spurs and the Warriors, but it's really the Warriors, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the weird thing is if you erase the Warriors from the league this year, we would be talking about the Spurs in almost the same way. They're not doing it in a way that's as exciting, but just in terms of, you know, the margin of victory thing is a big deal. Like that's, you know, no team has ever beaten its opponents by more points on average than the Spurs are right now. In some ways, you know, it's not going to get the credit or the pub that the Warriors record does, but that's insane. But right now I still, you know, the Warriors beat the Spurs by 30 the only time they met them this year. So, you know, take from that what you want. That's pretty persuasive to me.
I mean, a lot of guys sat that night though, if you remember.
So it was just Duncan.
Just Duncan.
Yeah. But I mean, Popovich is no dummy though. I mean, that game meant squat. I think that if you're a little, listen, my brother's a Spurs fan. So, you know, he always is that positive thinker and to him, it's like, whatever, they could lose by 100. It means nothing to me. But
I think the Spurs match up terribly with the Warriors.
I agree.
The Spurs are winning with defense this year. The Warriors, I mean, they're as close to an unstoppable. You have to score to beat them. You just have to score to beat them. I think if anyone has any chance at all of upsetting the Warriors, it would be the Thunder, just because they're so high powered on offense and they could steal a couple of games, 135 to 134. But I just think matchup wise, I think the Spurs really, really will have a lot of trouble with them in the playoffs. Mm.
Let's talk about the Spurs for a minute before we get into Golden State and some of the other teams. Here's a team that clearly is on the backside. As a unit, I mean, Duncan's not getting any younger, obviously. The youngest guy on this team is obviously Kawhi Leonard. He's the future of the franchise. Tony Parker probably has more years left than the other two do. I think Ginobili's pretty much close to done. I mean, he barely plays any defense. And Duncan, and is still working his butt off, but injuries are hurting him. I mean, he's nicked up, you know, a lot. But San Antonio, I think, is doing something a little different this year that they didn't do last year, and I think that's why they lost in the first round to the clip shop. I think Popovich realizes that the West is very top heavy. Tell me if you agree with this or not, Grant. The West is very top heavy. As a guy whose team is pretty much sweeping the sweeping the basement floor. I mean, you've got some bad teams in the West. I mean, look, I'm a Laker fan, and I bleed my purple and gold, but they are atrocious. Phoenix is no better. You got a lot of mediocrity and a lot of decent teams in the middle. And I think Popovich realized this season, look, I know we're good. I know we're not better than Golden State, so this is what we're going to do. I'm going to interchange my guys as best I can this season because I'm going to need their legs in May. And a fresh Spurs team in the Western Conference Finals could give Golden State a problem. But if they have to play straight through and they have to play long series in the first two rounds, then Golden State's going to have them where they want them. What's your thoughts on that theory?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Popovich takes that approach every year. He, you know, the Spurs were at the vanguard of resting their healthy guys just on schedules because Popovich has long known that, you know, April matters a heck of a lot more than November and June matters more than anything.
Right.
So he's been doing that forever and he's still doing it this year. To me, you know, and what hurt the Spurs last year was maybe they did it too much because the seeding really screwed them. They had to play the Clippers in that first round, and I think it was the last day of the season that the Spurs fell from like 2-6 or 2-7 or something like that in the standings just because of how those final games went.
Right.
So Popovich, I think if he learned anything, knows that the seeding really matters, and he may be pushing guys a little harder. But I do agree ultimately, and I've gone back and forth on this, that the Spurs do have the best chance to beat the Warriors in a series. And that's very different to me than saying I think that they will, because I don't think anybody will. I just don't see the Warriors have lost five games this season. I don't see anyone beating them four times in seven tries. That just seems completely impossible to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the Spurs are equipped to do it best, I think. You could make a case for the Thunder because of the athleticism in the offense, and maybe the Cavs, but that's hard. That's a hard sell based on how those games have gone this year. But I like the Spurs. I think they're great, and I think, you know, it's just they're great in the wrong year. That's the best way I can put it.
Mm. I mean, it's conceivable. I'm looking at the standings now and some of the stats. It's conceivable that we could have not one, but two teams go 41-0 at home.
Yep.
Which is unfathomable. I mean, I used to think when you were a little baby Cowboy, Roger, the 85-86 Celtics who went 40-1 at home. Little trivia question. Does anybody know who the one loss was? Anybody?
Got me.
Anybody? Portland.
I was six.
Yeah, it was Portland. Clyde Drexler walked into the old garden as a second-year player and beat the Celtics, and no one else did. No one in the playoffs did either. But yeah, Golden State right now 24-0 out at Oracle, and of course the Spurs are 28-0 at AT&T. So, and you know, the only thing I could see is if the Spurs actually beat the Warriors at AT&T. I don't even know if they played down there yet. If the playoffs started today in the East, well, we'll stay in the West since we're on the West right now. Golden State would play Utah, and I watched Utah Friday night against your Celtics, Cowboy, on Friday night. It was a decent game. They got some talent, but I don't think they'd have a snowball's chance. San Antonio would play Dallas, and Dallas could break their stones. Oklahoma City would play Portland. I think that'd be a fun series. And the Clippers would play Memphis.
I mean, you got to think. I mean, I don't know if you agree with this, Grant, that Houston will turn it around enough to at least make the playoffs.
I don't. You know what? I don't think so. It's crazy because they have by far the most talent of any team, you know, outside of the top four. But this is just a, I mean, it's a tire fire. Like their locker room is totally fragmented. Everybody knew they wanted to trade Dwight Howard at the deadline, but they didn't trade him. So he's back and he's got all that stuff hanging over his head. It's just, it's bad. I mean, if you could convince me that the talent was going to win out over the attitudes and the infighting and stuff like that, then maybe. Certainly on paper, like they are head and shoulders better than the Jazz, the Mavericks, the Blazers, the Grizzlies. You know, they're right there. They beat the Clippers last year in the playoffs. But it's just the vibes are real bad in Houston. It's going to be tough, I think, for them to sort of get it figured out.
They're right now a half game behind Utah for the eighth spot, and the Kings are about four back at the moment. Lakers right now would have the second most ping pong balls at 11 and 48. Let's take a quick look up at the East, and then I'm going to fire, and then Cowboy and I will fire some teams at you and give you and look for your thoughts on their second half.
Sure.
If the playoffs started today in the East, Cleveland, who has the best record in the East at 41-15, Cleveland would play. Well, let's talk about Cleveland for a minute. Have they really impressed you overall this season, even with the best record in the East? I feel like they've looked good at times. They've looked a little sluggish at times. How have you graded their season so far?
Here's the thing with Cleveland. I had kind of limited expectations for them this year, not because I don't think they're good, but because I think they knew coming in that they were so much better than everyone else in the East that they would really coast and they would really rest LeBron a lot. And I didn't think their record was going to be all that great. They haven't done that. LeBron has not rested nearly as much as I think he probably should have been resting. They're three games up on the Raptors. I think they're significantly better than the Raptors. They're easily the class of the East, but you know I could make the case that they're no more than the fourth best team in the league because I think the Warriors obviously and the Spurs and the Thunder are better than they are, and for the Cavs it's title or bust because LeBron is you know on the downside. He's had a zillion miles on him over the last few years, more than anyone at this age has ever played. So you know they've been okay in terms of like what we thought they'd be. It's just that I think there's a cap on their season, which comes up, you know, pretty far short of winning a title, which is kind of a shame for them.
Mm.
So, Grant, I mean, the one thing that they have to say, right, and that I say, I agree with everything you said with the way they've looked, but they took the Warriors to six without Irving and Love.
Yep.
Less than a year ago, right? Same Warriors team, essentially the same Cavs team,
and actually led that series. They were up 2-1.
Right.
So if you're a Cavs fan, I mean that has to, and with the way the East is, right? I mean if you're going to talk about a path to victory, a path to the title for Cleveland, it's that they roll through the East playoffs, which is very very possible, mm-hmm. and the Warriors get drug into a couple of long series and come in a little beat up, and you never know.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a great point. A couple of great points. The one is that, you know, before the season started, if you'd forced me to bet on a team to win the title, I would have bet the Cavs. Just speak for the reason you said, they have by far the easiest shot to get to the finals. And one, you know, that's really what you're betting on is they're going to get there for sure. You're just hoping that whoever faces them from the West is going to be hurt or something. Like that was the smart money, was to bet the Cavs. Even if you don't think they're the best team, they've got the best path to get there. The thing with the Irving and Love argument, and that there's a case to be made for sure. I mean, those are their second and third best offensive players. The problem is the Warriors absolutely eat those guys for lunch defensively. Irving is a terrible defensive point guard. Love is a joke defensively at power forward, and the Warriors in the regular season matchups just exploit those guys. I think maybe there's also a case to be made that it's kind of a wash whether those guys are out there or not just because Golden State attacks them so much.
Mm.
And to a point, I mean, but like a guy like Dellavedova just broke down from all the minutes, right?
Yep.
So even if just having Irving, maybe you're right. I mean, Steph Curry's going to put up 45 points a game on Irving, right? But maybe just having him, you can play Dellavedova 25 minutes a game instead of 40 that he was playing in the finals where he just completely broke down and the other guys broke down. I think just having those extra bodies helps, and obviously they're both great players. I mean, yeah, you have to say they're a better team with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love.
I think that's fair.
Cleveland would play Charlotte in the first round, and I want to talk about the Hornets a little bit in a few minutes. Toronto would play the Hawks in the first round. The Celtics would play the Bulls. That's old school. And the Heat, LeBron's former team, would take on Indiana, who I think a lot of people did not think would be this good with all the issues they had. And, of course, the big injury to Paul George. Any teams disappoint you in the first half that they should be better, either conference?
Well, in the East, since we're on the East, the Bucks come to mind. I mean, they were in the playoffs last year, and they had one of the youngest rosters in the league. So the thinking was, well, they've got nowhere to go but up. Their defense was like second best in the league, I think, or at least fourth, maybe. But, you know, they are 12th in the East right now, and the playoffs are kind of a pipe dream. So that one really sticks out to me as kind of a bummer.
Couldn't agree more there, Grant. I mean, they've fallen defensively, which is you wouldn't expect that, because some of their younger guys have taken a step up. But I mean, you look at the counting stats. I mean, Jabari Parker's been much better lately. Giannis seems to have taken a step forward, but they just can't stop anybody. They have one of the worst defenses in the NBA. That was not the case last year.
Yeah, and it's really bizarre. Like, I just don't understand. You know, if I'm the expert, so to speak, I wish I had a great answer for how the defense could fall off so badly. They signed Greg Monroe
over the offseason,
and that's big, right? But I thought honestly that, well, their perimeter defenders are so rangy and so good that, like, well, if you're going to have a bad interior guy, well, it's probably best if he's on a team with guys that keep people out of the paint. Right. I mean, at least you can hide him that way. But he's been awful. He's been coming off the bench. At least he was just before the break. And he hasn't, you know, obviously, basically, he's kind of played out in the worst case possible. But even that, it's really tough to imagine that swapping him in for Zaza Pachulia, who's been really good for Dallas this year, makes that much of a difference. But maybe it does.
Yeah, I mean, they're still starting Plumlee and OJ Mayo, and bringing Carter Williams and Monroe off the bench, and to about the same success rate they had with those guys in the starting lineups. And I personally think it's probably a 1 year. I really like their roster going forward, and I think it's just one of those lost years where they'll probably be back. Like, I don't think they should look to make any real wholesale changes on that roster.
Yeah, the one I'd point to is maybe Carter Williams, because this is his, you know, his second stop after what we thought was kind of a promising rookie year with the Sixers. And he's a guy that just, you know, you watch him and the tools seem to be there. Like, he's a point guard, but he's 6'7", he's rangy, he can do all these different things, but he just can't shoot, and he doesn't really make anybody better. And it's just kind of, you know, the whole is less than the sum of the parts with him. And I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to move him. I think maybe there were rumors before the deadline that was a possibility, but they need a point guard, and Carter Williams, he ain't it.
Yeah. And he's a turnover waiting to happen too. And his starting is like on that team was the worst possible thing for him, because he had to be like the man and be a scorer. And I mean, it's just not who he is, and not what was going to make him the best NBA player. So he put up good counting stats, but I think he actually probably regressed as a basketball player during that time in Philly.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And you know, we are still talking about the Bucks offense when the defense is the problem. You just can't have Carter Williams, a non-shooter, out there with Antetokounmpo, who also can't shoot. You, like, in today's NBA, if you've got two perimeter guys that defenses don't need to guard, like, you're just done. You can't be successful. It's not possible anymore.
I don't know if you guys, when I had to step away briefly, I'm sorry about that. I don't know if you guys mentioned the Knicks, but Grant, I mean, this was a team that had some expectations, and now they've already fired their coach, their interim coach, a guy I know, well, actually, I know their head coach very well, the big fish, gone. And the current interim coach, Kurt Rambis, got his Twitter hacked, and he likes kiddie porn or something weird, which is probably the highlight of the Knicks season. Has Phil Jackson kind of not done as much as he could or is this just a cash situation for this team, or is it the Dolans? What is it going to take to get the Knicks out of this doldrum? I mean, 11 games under 500. They had a promising year a couple years ago, and then now they're back down to the middling of the bottom. What could be done here?
Yeah, so here's the thing with the Knicks, and this is an impossible ask because New York fans and fans of this team specifically don't do well with reasonable expectations. But that's what needs to happen because, look, the Knicks won 17 games last year. And when you're that bad, somebody out there crunched the numbers. Another Bleacher Report guy, Jared Dubin, crunched the numbers. And if you win 17 games, the best you can reasonably hope for, just on average in terms of teams that do that the next year, is to win 27. Like, if you win 10 more games after you were so bad that you won 17, you've done awesome. And the Knicks have 24 wins right now. They're going to get to 27, barring just a total implosion. So I think the first thing is you need to accept the idea that, like, incremental progress is still progress. And that's not going to satisfy anybody, especially Knicks fans. It's just not going to be enough. But they have made progress. So they have Kristaps Porzingis, who is, one of the better building blocks you could ask for as a rookie. Carmelo Anthony makes too much money. He's not a superstar. That's a problem because he's under contract forever. But they've got a good rookie. They're going to, have some money to spend. Phil Jackson hasn't done a great job, but under the circumstances, especially saddled with a terrible coach in Fisher and an even worse one now in Kurt Rambis, the Knicks are okay. And okay is not good enough, but okay is okay.
Mm-hmm. And I agree what you say, what you said about Anthony, but if you look at it, he's really, I think he's having his best year in a long time, and he's really deferred a lot more this year and changed his game up for the better of the team, which is not something I thought I may ever say about Carmelo Anthony. So I do give him credit there, and it does look like he wants to win. And I mean, for them, I think one of their biggest problems is just a complete lack of a point guard. Calderon,
totally.
Calderon made Kyrie Irving look like first team all defense, even when Calderon was in his prime. and now he's over the hill. I mean, he's in a point guard driven league to go out there with that guy. I mean, he's outside of maybe Donald Sloan, the worst starting point guard in the NBA. I think, and from what you've seen of Jerry and Grant, he looks like he could have a little bit of potential. And I think that the Knicks, they were 500 at one point, right? I know they've lost nine of their last 10, but they were at 500, and I think that kind of drove Calderon getting all this playing time and put them into win now mode. Well, to me, it's time to blow that up, play the kid, put Calderon on the bench, start building for the future.
Yeah, totally agree. This is the reasonable expectations thing again. I think as much as fans kind of got a little ahead of themselves, the Knicks got ahead of themselves when they were around 500, which really wasn't that long ago. They were overperforming, obviously, as we've seen over the past few weeks. But yeah, Jerian Grant, he's someone that on a team like the Knicks needs to be playing basically until he can't stand up anymore. Like you need to figure out, What is he going to be? Is he a backup, which is kind of my suspicion, ultimately? But you need to really get as much information on your young guys now as you possibly can, because you're, 24 and 35 now. We're well aware of what the Knicks ceiling is, and it's not the playoffs. So you got to figure it out. I don't know what Jerian Grant's going to be. I think he might be pretty good. I think you could make the case he's better than Calderon now. So really, in any circumstance, he ought to be playing more.
Another team in the tri-state area that's having a fairly miserable season is the Brooklyn Nets, and today they waive Joe Johnson, probably because they want something in return if somebody picks him up. Who could use him right now?
It's tough. Joe Johnson, 5 years ago, everybody could have used him. Now, it's going to be playoff teams. It's going to be, the Cavs are in the conversation. The Hawks were someone I heard mentioned. I think, the Raptors should probably take a look at him. He's at this stage of his career, he's someone that, defensively you can really only stick on like power forwards because he just can't move. But he's a guy that like a lot of NBA vets respect. Supposedly he's a great locker room guy, and he's made a bunch of big shots. So you know, wherever he ends up, and it'll be on a team that's hoping to contend, he's not going to play big minutes just because of where he is in his career right now. Mm-hmm. But he could give somebody something, like even if it's just someone who's not going to be phased by, you know, having to take a big shot at the end of a playoff game. That's got some value.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, Grant. And I mean, I kind of envision him, you know, in the whatever situation he ends up with. I think it, of course, it will be with a contender 20 minutes a night, but kind of filling that role that Paul Pierce filled last year for the Wizards, where, you know, maybe be younger core, and then you got a guy with ice water in his veins. I mean, because, you know, as bad as he is defensively, you can kind of hide it because to your point, he can guard the – he's a pretty big guy, and – he still is. He's cagey, and he can still play. He's still a good offensive player, not a great offensive player, but a good offensive player who I think he can definitely help a team's second unit, a contending team.
Yeah, and you know the funny thing is that a team I forgot to mention is Boston, and they're a team that kind of needs this another guy who's going to be like, damn it, like this is I'm going to take this shot at the end of games, because other than Isaiah Thomas, they don't have that guy. And it's just funny because the Celtics were the team that drafted Johnson 10,000 years ago and yep. traded him right away. So we remember that very well.
I believe it was for Tony Delk and Rodney Rogers.
The immortal Tony Delk.
Rodney Rogers. Before we dive into teams, one quick question. We kind of know who everyone thinks is the front runner for the MVP. Are there any dark horses other than Big Steph?
It's Steph. That's it. I mean, you know, I got some recency bias because I watched him get 42 last night or 41 and he had 51 tonight. I just got finished watching that game. I struggle to remember a player that changed the game like he's changing it. He is far and away the MVP. Nobody's close in my mind. I think you can make a case for three other guys, Kawhi Leonard, in some order, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, and maybe Russ Westbrook if you threw him in there, but that's it. And I don't think any of those guys have a shot.
Okay. All right.
Couldn't agree more. Curry would have to go down tomorrow.
Yeah.
Still might win it.
I don't know.
If he blew his ACL out tomorrow, he still might win the MVP.
Yeah. And the Warriors may still win the NBA title.
For me, it would be Westbrook. If we were arguing about who was number two, it would be Westbrook, just the way he, you know, triple-double waiting to happen. Very, very good team. Leonard, I think if Pop gave him more minutes, he might actually be giving Curry a run for his money. But he's still, you know, like all the Spurs, he plays 30 minutes a night, and it's tough to justify an MVP playing that in those minutes.
True.
Mm. All right. Last piece of the segment. Cowboy and I are going to fire some teams at you. You give us your second half forecast. All right? Cowboy, you go first. Throw a team out at him.
Sure. Didn't know we were doing this. How about the...
Well, it's pretty simple.
how about the Chicago Bulls?
So the Bulls right now, they're not going to have Joakim Noah for the second half. Derrick Rose has been playing, like, the last week was about as well as he's played since he first got injured 4 years ago. But then he missed a game. Jimmy Butler's out. It's a weird thing to say, but the Bulls now, even though they've got a new head coach and a bunch of new philosophies, are kind of going to spend the second half like the Bulls of the last 5 years did, which is just hoping to find lineups and playing really hard and maybe, you know, finishing 6-8 games above 500. They're just going to have to gut it out. But they look like a playoff team, albeit, you know, kind of a fragile one.
Memphis.
Memphis is done. Marc Gasol broke his foot, and he is by far their best player, by far their most important player. He's out for the season. They are 10 games over 500 now. I am almost certain they're going to lose more often than they win the rest of the way. That might mean they stay in the playoffs. It might also mean that they slip out just by a little bit, but whoever they play in the first round basically has a walkover win, to my mind.
All right. The only other team that you could make any case would have a snowball's chance in hell, the Clippers.
The Clippers are tricky, man. I mean, so Blake Griffin's been out for whatever it is, 4 or 5 weeks, I think. And they went something like 20-6 so far since he's been out. And we know that last year they were good enough to beat the Spurs. They still got Chris Paul, who's been awesome. He stepped it up with Griffin out. The snowball's chance in hell thing still rings true to me, though, because they're just, even with Griffin back, they're just not on the level of the top three in the West. And to get to the finals, they got to beat two of those teams, and it's just not going to happen.
Celtics.
The Celtics are kind of fun. They're still like they were last year, which is that they don't have a star, but they're really well coached. They're the third best team in the East right now. Defensively, they've slipped over the last like month or so, which is a real problem because their offense is one that kind of depends on, you know, guys figuring out how to score when Isaiah Thomas isn't on the floor. I think they're probably still going to finish as the number three seed in the East. I like them, but they're a star away, and it's kind of been that way for really since the beginning of last year.
All right, the second most disappointing team in the league, the Wizards.
Oh man, I don't know about the Wizards. So the thing with them is they've never really been that bad. I think they've only been – the worst they've been is five games under 500, but the best – they haven't been over 500 since, like, the end of November. And they just keep floating around in that, like, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 range in the East. They're – I mean, gun to my head, I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think the Hornets are better than them. I think the Hawks are better. The Bulls are better. But they might. I mean, John Wall is probably going to be the best player in the East that doesn't make the playoffs. So that's something. But they need to make some changes there, I think, ultimately.
You don't think Markieff Morris was the answer?
You know what? You could have sold me. You could have sold me that he might have been because he didn't want to be in Phoenix. And I was thinking like, well, you know, when he tries, he's been okay. But he's been worse in Washington. He's been worse than he was in Phoenix. And he like did everything, you know, in Phoenix short of like setting the court on fire.
A team that I like whose bandwagon I kind of hopped on at the beginning of the year, cause I knew the Lakers are going to be pretty atrocious. So, I hopped on their bandwagon and they're floating around and they're in the playoff hunt. Portland
is so awesome. I mean, they were supposed to be absolutely nobody picked them to be a playoff team. I don't think anybody picked them to win 30 games and they're at 30 wins right now. So the thing I think about them is we all keep expecting a regression just because they sold off or they lost four of their five starters from last year when they were really good. And basically they have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And I was expecting along with everyone else, you know, they're just going to be bad and they just keep playing well. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won six in a row. And at some point, we just need to like adjust our baseline expectations and just say like, well, maybe they are good. And I think we've reached that point now. I think they're going to make the playoffs. Unless they can get up, you know, into that 4-5 range, it's really hard for me to see them winning a series. But they're maybe what like 2 years ahead of schedule right now because this was supposed to be a total rebuild.
It speaks to the importance of the point guard because Lillard's taken a step up from very good to elite. And even with those losses, they're markedly improved. And McCollum's been fantastic in his kind of a big breakout.
How about one more before we let you go? How about
Sure. Sorry.
Go ahead, Cowboy.
The Pelicans, another disappointment.
Oh man, you know we were talking about the Bucks as the most disappointing team in the East. I think New Orleans might be the most disappointing team in the league. You know, Anthony Davis last year, you could have made a case that he was the MVP. And they went and they hired Alvin Gentry, who has presided over some awesome offenses as an assistant and with the Steve Nash Suns. So it was like, oh, okay. Well, the Pelicans were the eighth seed last year. You know, the worst they're going to do is like six this year. And it has just gone, it's just fallen apart. Davis hasn't been as good. The team has been terrible around him. Everybody's gotten hurt. Alvin Gentry has not done a good job. His lineups make no sense half the time. He's not playing Davis at center enough, even though Davis has played more than half his minutes there. It needs to be almost exclusively just really bad. And the problem with the Pelicans real quick is that they've traded away picks to get guys like Jrue Holiday, who's fine. But what they really need is a second star to grow with Davis. And unless they really bottom out and tank, they're not going to get that guy in the draft. So they're in like just the worst kind of no man's land right now.
Yeah, I mean, they brought in Holiday. I mean, Gentry doesn't even start Holiday, which I will never understand. And Tariq Evans, who's done. And, you know, those are, to your point, they're second-tier stars, right?
Yep.
Not the kind. And Davis has been, I don't want to say he's taken a big step back, but the injuries have to be concerning to them. That he's you know, there's just guys like that can't seem to fight through it. And he certainly seems like one of those guys. I mean, how many games has he left in the first or second quarter this year? It's like 4 or 5 games that he hasn't finished.
Yeah, that happens a little too often for a guy that talented. And you don't know what the cause is, but, you know, if you're the Pelicans, he is literally all you have. So it's never good when he's getting nicked up like that.
Well, I was really surprised they didn't trade Ryan Anderson at the deadline. They could have gotten something for him, a piece for the future. He's a guy who could very, very well fit in on a contender. I mean, as a, you know, the ultimate kind of stretch four. It was really surprising to me that they didn't move him.
Well, and they blew it doubly because they're going to lose him for nothing. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. Eric Gordon, same thing, unrestricted free agent. They're going to lose those guys. And cap space, if you're a team like New Orleans where guys don't necessarily want to go sign just because, cap space isn't worth that much. So they needed to get picks out of that at the very least, and they didn't.
And everybody's going to have cap space.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the other thing is it's with the cap going up, it's – you know, it's hoarding that cap space isn't what it used to be.
Nope. Grant, it has been a pleasure. Welcome to our new world here at Sports Evolution. I hope you enjoyed things here in the lounge, in the XP lounge. Of course, everyone, check him out on Bleacher Report. What do you got up today?
I'm working on power rankings right now. That's our big weekly thing. It's going to go live later tonight after these games go final, and it'll be all over the place, front page and stuff, most of tomorrow, I think. So working on that diligently tonight.
Okay. Well, as we're talking right now, as you mentioned, Steph dropped 51, Golden State won. They're going to halftime, two of the worst teams in the league playing, and the Nets have a 21-point lead at the half on close to the half on Phoenix. Speaking of New Orleans, they're actually leading Oklahoma State by 8 early in the fourth quarter. Another final. Celtics won, beat the Bucks 112-107. And then later tonight, Houston's at Portland. Big game there. And San Antonio is at Utah. Grant, we'll have you back on in the middle of a month or so, month and a half, as the second half eats up a bit and see how things look.
For sure, guys. Right. This was fun. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Good.
Thanks, Graham. Yep. Pleasure to meet you.
Yes. We'll have you back on. We'll take a break here in the Sports Evolution. We'll let Cowboy get some amoxicillin in him. Then we come back. We'll talk a little college hoops. I know it'll be tough, but you know, we got to dig in. And I want to talk to Cowboy about this really awful MMA fight that I watched on Friday night. More Sports Evolution after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySpeedNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Welcome back, Blazeby Nation, to the Sports Evolution. Scott Piscolo and the Cowboy Roger Morissette. We've got a MASH unit in here today in the XP Lounge. Instead of Johnny Blue and cigars, we got penicillin and kaopectate, Pepto-Bismol, whatever's going on in here.
Breakfast of champions right there.
Exactly. Blazebynation.com. By the way, we thank Grant Hughes. Isn't he great? He's awesome. Guy knows his stuff.
I love a good basketball mind, you know.
Yes.
I could talk basketball for the whole show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can check out Grant's stuff on BleacherReport.com. Great site in general. Great NBA writers, NFL writers, wrestling. They got everything. BleacherReport.com. Quite good. Another great site is PlaySpeedNation.com. Your home for everything pop culture. JR and I released our most recent Vintage Vault Refresh, the January 7th, 1989 episode of Saturday Night's Main Event. So check that out. Speaking of Main Event, the most recent episode of the Main Event that I recorded last night, myself, Ben Morse, and J. Arsenio Di Amato recapped Fastlane, talked about Raw, the return of Shane O'Mac, and of course I went on my rant about asshole wrestling fans. Of course, most people probably think I am one now, but whatever. check out the show, though. It was fantastic. Most recent episode of Place to Be Nation's Main Event. One guy who's not an asshole wrestling fan, this guy I'm talking to right now. Because he's the kind of guy that would get picked on for his Batista and Randy Orton t-shirts.
Hey, you know.
But no, he wears them proud, damn it.
I like those big hosses.
That's right.
You know, I'm the WWE's wet dream, and I'm proud of it.
Exactly. But you stay proud, Cowboy. You stay proud. Brad had his had the most recent episode of Ring of Honor TV, his recap. The excellent WWE Network adventure continues. The April 29th, 1983 episode of World Class Championship Wrestling. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walker on the Web was from yesterday. It's still there. It's still fresh. Andy Helene is doing his something called Squared Circle Cinema. He's going to talk about movies produced by WWE or movies that had wrestlers in it. And the movie he talks about this week, Roadhouse. You remember Roadhouse, Cowboy, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're remaking Roadhouse, right, with Rousey?
Oh, are they really? She's Swayze?
I believe I am 99% sure of that.
And she's Swayze?
She would be Swayze.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Oh, my God, that is awesome. Oh, my God, I can't wait for that. Anyway, check out Andy Helene's recap of Roadhouse with Terry Funk. Oh, don't hit me, Rhonda. Speaking of NBA, the most recent NBA team podcast, the guys talk about calling bluffs. Start talking about the second half of the season. So listen to our show tonight and then listen to the NBA team podcast. You'll get your full pro basketball fill. Mr. Bayless has his Raw rundown from Monday. And, of course, the most recent episode of the Kevin Kelly Show was earlier this week. And on there was a guy that's part of my my sports world, NFL insider Jason LaConfora was on the show. Jason is a little bit of a wrestling fan as well as a football junkie. And, of course, he works for CBS Sports. So check out the most recent episode of The Kevin Kelly Show. Don't forget on the side of the website, placementnation.com, check out the Amazon link. So if you're buying anything on Amazon, go through us first, and we get a little taste back to help run the site. So we thank you for that ahead of time. Also, you can click on the ebook that JR and I are doing as we're going back through our Vintage Vault refreshes. And the first ebook is the Federation Years. So it's all of our Vintage Vault recaps from WrestleMania 1 to Survivor Series 1992. So check it out. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. So, Cowboy, it was an ugly evening down at The Rock in Newark as the Friars just continue to sadly circle the bowl, and we don't know why. A 70-52 loss tonight by PC to Seton Hall. Friars are what? I think they're 19-9 now.
19-9, 1-5 in February.
Yeah. They were the darlings a couple months ago. Is it stamina? Are they gassed?
Stamina, I think, definitely has something to do with it, Scott. I mean, at the end of the day, the Friars are essentially a two-man team. Two very good players, but a two-man team. And when you're a two-man team, those two guys play lots and lots and lots of minutes. Mm-hmm. And they were coming up. So I believe they're second and third in the Big East in minutes, Bentel and Chris Dunn. They were coming off, I believe, a seven-day rest tonight, and they came out flat. Dunn was sick, but I'm not one to make excuses. If he was out there, he should be performing. They came out flat. They didn't play well. Bentel's the only guy that showed up. It was a disheartening loss. I mean, they have a tendency to every game kind of seems to go the same way, where they start out terrible. They make a run, then they close the half poorly, then they open the second half really poorly and go down about 20, and then they come back and make it close at the end. I mean, that was the I went to Xavier. I was at the game at Xavier, and that was the blueprint there too. For the Friars, it's just a matter of they can't shoot, and it all you can talk about other stuff, but if you can't shoot, it's tough to win.
And
they're the kind of team, mind you, that if they get hot, which hasn't happened in a couple of months, but if they get hot for an extended period and knock down jump shots, they could make a miracle run to the Final Four. They're that good otherwise, but they can't hit the broad side of a barn. I mean, they miss more open jump shots than we see out on the Flanagan court.
They are not. In other words, the Friars are not arsonists right now.
No. Wet matches.
Wet matches.
But with that said, they have three what should be pretty easy games. They have DePaul home for DePaul, home for Creighton, and then I believe it's at St. John's. Is that St. John's or the last? Yeah, I believe it's at St. John's. And so those are three games where they'll be pretty heavily favored. If they can win those, they go into the Big East tournament 22-9 and are probably looking at a 7-ish seed. If they can get some work done in the Big East tournament, could bump up to a 5. At this point, I'm really just hoping that they get out of the first round. Like that, to me, that would be a successful season.
Mm. Yeah, things are tough right now. I think I agree with you. I think a lot of it is a lack of shooting and a lack of depth. And the Big East has not gotten easy. I mean, you saw a very good team at the Cintas Center in Ohio. They're no joke, Xavier.
They're loaded.
Yeah,
they're
and last night they beat Nova. So we may have a new. They may be number one on Monday. Who knows?
They wasted Nova, and it's they're really really tough at home. And those two teams are head and shoulders above the rest of the conference. I mean, it would not be a surprise to see both of those teams in the Final Four. I mean, they're both that good.
Yeah. Well, right now, I'm not sure what Lunardi has in ESPN, but my man Jerry Palm on CBSSports.com has both Nova and Xavier as number one seeds. And that's pretty impressive. That means one of them would be number one seed as an at-large. Actually, it's two Big 12s and two Big Easts. Jerry Palm has Nova, Xavier, Oklahoma, and Kansas as his number one seeds at the moment. So two Big 12s. So two of the four number one seeds would be at-larges. So only four games involving ranked teams tonight. Indiana leading Illinois by 9 in the second half. Utah is laying a beating on Arizona State. It's 64-24 with 10:14 to go in the game. That game was 30-2 in favor of the Utes.
Wow.
30-2. Duke tonight beat Florida State 80-65 and SMU over Memphis 69-62. We'll get more into college basketball on our next show. In fact, we'll I think one more. Well, he's got to make his official debut with you guys, Cowboy and Cowboy Senior, my brother Chris, who was on the show during bowl season. We talked about the college bowls, but he will be, of course, as everyone knows, a thorough hoop college hoops junkie. So we'll have him on our next show.
Yeah. And for Senior, you know, Senior's under the weather tonight, and I think we you know, we probably saved ourselves from a very, very negative Senior.
Yes.
But between the illness, the way the Friars played, I mean, he's as diehard as they come. I mean, real diehard. And then the fact that he has to get up for work at 2 a.m. would have not been much of a cocktail.
He might have
berated Grant and made him never come back. Just for saying, Isaiah Thomas wasn't one of the top five crunch time scorers in the league.
Quickly, and I'll ask Senior this on the next show too. Although I know we're kind of full blown out of football season. We haven't had a show since Super Bowl, and we congratulate the Denver Broncos on world champions in their 24-10 win over the Panthers.
And I'd like to congratulate Peyton on all the news he's made since the Super Bowl.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, there is some ugly shit going down in Knoxville right now. I mean, ugly. Ugly. Not good stuff going down.
I think we can just leave it at that.
Yeah, just not pretty.
Riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think he should go to the Rams. I think he should just go away and be happy with his two rings and be done with it. Talking about that, though, quickly, before we move on to a couple other topics, how much time does number 12 in Foxborough have left?
I mean, if you ask him, he says he'll play till he's 45. I mean, from all accounts, he's maniacal about his staying in shape and the preparation. And you really haven't seen an appreciable drop-off. And you know, you saw it with Manning. It can happen quick. But Manning had the neck issue. He gutted it out for a couple of years, and he was fantastic. But after the neck, he never really got that arm strength back. Brady, you know, obviously tore the ACL, but never really had an arm issue. And he's not mobile anyway. It's not like he's, you know, his legs are a big part of his game. I don't see any reason. I mean, you know, people get hurt, but I don't see any reason he can't go at least another 3 or 4 years if he can avoid catastrophic injury.
Okay. Well, I'm asking because obviously the combine's going on now, whoop-de friggin' do, and the draft, of course, is in a couple months. So just wanted to bring that up. But we are done with NFL. The NFL season's over, and I want to say something, Cowboy.
The Pats have a guy they think is the quarterback of the future, at least a guy they're grooming.
Garoppolo.
So no need to take another one. Yeah, I mean, he's looked fine. So,
right.
You know.
And I want to say this on the show. You and Senior did a fantastic job during the NFL season here on the Evolution. You and Senior and Schmitty, the doctor and I just were so busy on Sundays, the holy rollers we are, har, 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 throughout the fall that you guys did an awesome job. So so I'm officially cutting you loose. You're done for the year. No, I'm only kidding.
I appreciate that, Scott. And,
we will be – the doctor will return. Doctor started a new job just after the season, so he's just been swallowed up with it, and this is his busiest time. The doctor will make his return because Cowboy, on Sunday night, March 28th, it is the 2016 Sports Evolution MLB Preview.
Fantastic.
You, me, Senior, the doctor, Schmitty, Joel Barnhart, we're going to sit here and we're going to talk baseball.
That one might be a part one and part two.
It could very well be. If we have a lot of guys, we may have to start early that night. We have to start like at 7.
With that cast, that's a whole lot of knowledge in that room.
It is. It's going to be awesome. So we'll be doing that Sunday night, March 28th, and we'll probably post it that night as well, but that's when we're recording. Me, you, Senior, the Doctor, Schmitty, Joel Barnhart. 2016 Major League Preview. For once, I could be... I haven't been this stoked about a spring training in a very, very long time, but I think I got a pretty damn good team. I think the Red Sox got a little bit better in this offseason.
What do you think of the odds? Did you see the odds? Did you see the Cubbies 4-1 to win the World Series?
Yeah.
I mean, like a very big time, the odds on favorite. I was surprised it was that wide.
I didn't look at the rest of the odds. What were the Mets?
I don't know, Scott. I don't have it in front of me.
Okay. I bet you the Mets were probably...
The next few teams came in between 10 and 15 to 1.
I bet you the Mets are like 12 to 1. I bet you the Mets are like 12.
And you know who wasn't in the top five? Kansas City.
Which is funny because they're not that well. I mean, their pitching took a hit. And we'll go more in depth of this, of course. But I mean, the pitching took a hit. They did lose... they kept Gordon. They did lose Zobrist. They did lose Cueto. So they're starting pitching. They do have Ventura back, and they've got, their pitching's okay, but it's not as good as
they were very good without Cueto. I mean, they didn't have Cueto that long. You know, it's not like, you know what I mean.
Right. But, we'll dive into it.
I never liked that. I never liked that because especially that kind of team, like they're kind of a gritty team. Like to give them just that bulletin board material right from day one, it seems like a they're going to come out with something to prove even after winning the World Series.
Yeah. I mean, it's we got a lot to talk about, so we'll dive more into baseball. Spring training's just
let's move on.
So we got a big show coming up on March 28th. I got to talk to you about, by the way, congratulations to, Denny Hamlin, who of course won Sunday's Daytona 500. My brother and I actually sat and, we watched the entire race on Sunday. It was the first Daytona 500 I've watched from beginning to end. I don't know how big a NASCAR guy you are, Cowboy, but, my brother's a huge NASCAR guy, so we'll get a lot of input from him throughout the summer, talking NASCAR. So
casual fan. I've been to about 10 NASCAR races.
Really? Jesus, it's more than I have.
Yeah, and we, I had a...
Loudon?
No, I went to Watkins Glen a couple times.
Oh!
I went to Martinsville, went to Pocono, and that's all I got on the tip of my tongue. But we used to do once a year, a group of guys. We'd go once a year and we'd camp out at the track and spend the weekend. And so, but very casual fan. But it was very exciting the way that race ended. It was closest finish in the history of the Daytona 500, right?
Yeah, I mean, I my brother and I are yelling like, my God, will somebody make a move? And then Denny Hamlin made a move and he got Matt Kenseth to bump out and he just beat a very game Martin Truex who ran a great race. My favorite driver is Joey Logano because he's a Connecticut kid. He's from Middletown. So, and he finished. He's the defending Daytona 500 champion, and he ended up finishing sixth. He had a good race. So, couple bang ups. Dale Jr. got smacked up late. He was leading for a decent amount of the race too. So, congrats to Denny Hamlin. But we'll definitely talk about. NASCAR throughout the season when my brother comes on. So, and golf. I don't know how many golf junkies there are, but my brother's
senior, big golf.
All right, so him and my brother. My brother's a good fan of the ancillary sports, big golf guy, big NASCAR guy, and obviously and big of everything, big NFL guy. My brother's he's been on Extra Point a billion times, as everyone knows. But he's a college hoop guy, and we'll have him on our next show to dive into college hoops. But we will have the murderer's row of baseball junkies coming up on March 28th with our Sports Evolution MLB preview. One thing that was not fun to watch. And that was Friday night. I was with the doctor. We go into the Nets game, and we went into Manhattan, and we went to one of my favorite bars on 33rd Avenue, Jack Dempsey's. Great drinks, good wings. And, that stuff on. And that's where I was watching your Celtics, Cowboy, against Utah. They were the late game. The early game was Indiana beat Golden – not Golden State. No, they didn't beat Golden State.
Nobody beats Golden State.
Yeah, nobody beats Golden State. Who the hell they – Oklahoma City. They beat Oklahoma City. And then the night game, your guys were in Salt Lake City. I don't know who. I think the Spurs. Let me get my teams right here, Scott. Jesus. The Jazz were winning most of that game. I don't know if they won or not, but they were winning when we left the bar, the Jazz. But on a couple of the other TVs, was the Bellator card on, I'm guessing it was Spike. And the early card was not atrocious, but these last two fights, the two fights that I think were the big deals, let's just say that's the reason why I am a gigantic wrestling fan, because I don't have to get totally disappointed when I get bumped up about something. I don't know why I'm a big fan of his, probably because he's such a nut job, but I like Kimbo Slice. But him and I think it's, what's his name? Something Maya 5000 or what the hell?
Dada.
Dada 5000. This was one of the most abysmal matches, MMA fights I've ever seen in my life. But midway through the second round, Dada looked like he was going to like just keel over and die.
Well, I mean, I don't know. You probably shouldn't say that.
Well, that's...
What happened? I mean, he suffered like renal failure after the fight and like almost did die.
He screwed up. I was talking to somebody at work who's a big MMA guy like you are, and he said that, well, he dropped like way too much weight, way too much fat, too fast at the end there, and wrecked his system.
Yeah, just looking for the payday.
Yeah.
I mean, both that fight, both the Slice Dada fight and the Shamrock fight are both, you know, they're more circus attractions than legitimate at this point. I mean, they're trying, Bellator's just trying to boost their ratings, and they do that. But yeah, I mean, that the Kimbo Dada fight was ended out being dangerous for the guy. And I mean, Kimbo didn't look much better, frankly. I mean, he was,
and I
felt like he was fresh.
Yeah, and that's the best I think he's looked, like physically. He was pretty trim. Usually he's beefy. He looked like he was like, oh my God, will this guy just fall? I can't deal with this anymore. It sort of felt like after a while. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, but it's more, that's more of a sideshow kind of fight.
And then Royce Gracie and Kenny have their, Kenny Shamrock, have their main event. I think it's like their, what, fifth time they faced each other or fourth time they faced each other?
Yes.
For
first time in a while.
Yeah. I think 2007, I think, was the last time they fought. 2006 or 2007, I think. And at one point in the first round, it is very clear that Royce kicks Kenny square in the twig and berries. And something happens, and Kenny falls, and Royce wins a fight, and they're barking at each other. I felt like I was watching WrestleMania 14 with Shamrock and The Rock on it. It also ended very ugly, and they ended up like making up and hugging at the end or something. I don't know, but I feel like Bellator is to TNA what UFC is to WWE. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't seem the same unless I'm as if I'm watching a UFC card. Do you get that feeling when you're watching Bellator?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're legitimate for the most part, and they've had guys transition to the UFC, like Eddie Alvarez, who just beat Anthony Showtime Pettis, who's a great fighter, and then guys, you know, Ben Henderson, who's a champion in the UFC, his deal ran out and he signed with Bellator, so they actually do have some real fighters. But they're definitely a clear number two from a promotion standpoint. Like, the UFC doesn't have to do that shit with Kimbo and Shamrock. You know, it's Scott Coker who runs Bellator, who ran Strikeforce, if you remember Strikeforce.
Yes, I do remember Strikeforce, yes.
Yeah, and they had to do that stuff, too. And it's a money grab, you know? I mean, they're very, very good fighters in Bellator that nobody knows. So you put the good fighters on, and then you trot out some has-been in the main event to sell the tickets.
Well, the Bellator has another show coming up tomorrow night.
Remind you of anything there, Scott?
Yes. Speaking of TNA tour, Bellator actually has a card tomorrow night. Bellator 150 from the Kansas Star Arena in Mulvane tomorrow night. Then three events on Saturday. The big one, of course, UFC Fight Night from the O2 Arena in London. Our man, Mr. Silva, making his big return, taking on Bisping. I think he knocks Bisping out. What do you think?
Man, I don't know. So, obviously, I think this is a really interesting fight. I mean, neither guy's really, like, at this point, I think, a huge threat in the division, but they're both like solid top 10 guys. So Silva's a real question mark, because obviously he hasn't fought much. He fought Weidman the second time, had that disgusting leg injury where his femur snapped in half.
Ugh.
And then he was out for a long time, and he fought one fight against Diaz. He tested positive for every steroid under the sun after the fight, and both before and after the fight. And at his hearing, he claimed it was it was the most ridiculous defense ever. He claimed it was a male sexual stamina pill that someone gave him that he didn't know what was in it. Okay.
Oh, brother.
Yes. And Nick Diaz tested positive for pot in the same fight. So it was a real, real banner night for the UFC there.
It's like that, what was it, 06 Great American Bash, where we had like four wrestlers with liver enzyme issues or whatever. Yikes.
But, I mean, so if it's the real, if it's a reasonable facsimile of Anderson Silva, he should win. But this fight's a lot more interesting than it would have been 4 years ago when Silva was still at his peak. Because Bisping's a good fighter, and he's gutsy, and, you know, he's very, very good on his feet, good all-around fighter. I'm sure he's very motivated, and Silva could very well be rusty. And if he's not on anything, he's 40 years old. You know, it's you know, could go either way. I've never really liked Bisping on a personal level. Like, he got if you're not a longtime UFC fan, you should look up Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson. And Dan Henderson, there was a lot of trash talk before that fight. And Dan Henderson has the H-bomb, his right hand, and he knocks Bisping cold with it. And then just gives him the most brutal FU punch, like a flying punch to the face while he's knocked out cold. And then in the interview afterward, he said it's because he didn't like the way he talked to him before the fight. So it was fantastic. Hmm. But I'm going to pick Silva, but I'm going to say by decision, maybe contentious decision.
Okay. All right. The next UFC pay-per-view is on March 5th, next Saturday. At the MGM Grand, and our man Conor McGregor was moving up in weight, right?
Yeah, so this is the big news here. The big news in the UFC is Conor McGregor moving up to challenge Rafael Dos Anjos, the 155-pound champion. Huge fight, huge risk for McGregor. I mean, Dos Anjos is a murderer. I mean, Dos Anjos destroyed Pettis, just destroyed Cowboy Cerrone. Mm-hmm. He's been on a run. And two weeks before the fight, Dos Anjos broke his foot and is out of the fight. So it came down to the names you heard mentioned for a replacement were Cowboy Cerrone, Pettis, Frankie Edgar, Nate Diaz. Frankie Edgar's hurt. He would have been the logical replacement. He's like next in line in McGregor's division. Mm-hmm. But so they gave the fight to Nate Diaz, but it's going to be at 170.
Right.
So McGregor's jumping up from 145 to 170, which is something. And if you haven't, if you're unfamiliar with the Diaz brothers, if there's any guys in MMA that could rival the shit-talking of Conor McGregor, it's the Diaz brothers. I mean, they are always getting into fights outside the ring, inside the ring. They got into a huge brawl on national TV in Elite XC. So it was like the first time that MMA had ever been on one of the big three networks.
Wow.
And they got into just a fist fight in the ring. Gus Johnson had to tell him to cut it out. And so the press conference for Diaz and McGregor was just fantastic. Like, you have to watch the unedited version, because otherwise all you hear is beep. But Diaz accused him of doing steroids, and it was great. It was great. But the fight itself, very interesting. Diaz isn't as good as McGregor, but I think he's got a style that could give him some problems. He's kind of a volume-punching, real long-rangey guy. And he's bigger. He's quite a bit bigger. So I think McGregor will win. But I think it'll be very – it's not – I do not – Diaz has a really, really good chin. So – and with McGregor moving up in weight, there's no way in hell he blitzes him like he did Aldo. It's going to be – I like a bloody a bloody win for McGregor. It's going to be a fun fight to watch, and Diaz will definitely flip him off during the fight. That's what he does.
That's great. And then the next UFC pay-per-view. I mean, there's going to be fight nights in between.
Well, you can talk about the so that's not just the McGregor fight. That's Holly Holmes fighting Miesha Tate for the women's title that she won from Ronda Rousey.
Ah.
First fight back after she fought Rousey. And everybody thought that they were going to keep her on the shelf until Rousey was ready for the rematch because they don't want to blow that opportunity. I mean, because it's a very lucrative fight, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. They're looking at July 9th for UFC 200.
Yep. But they're giving her the Tate's the best fighter in the division. Definitely the best fighter in the division. Tate took Rousey three rounds once. I mean, she's lost to her. She's lost to her twice, but she did take her three rounds in the second fight. And she hasn't lost to anybody else, and she's a tough girl. And I really give Dana White and the UFC credit for putting this fight together, because the easy thing to do, like what boxing, no way in hell this fight happens. They would have kept Holm on the shelf for 2 years waiting for Rousey just to ensure that she didn't that you know the cash cow didn't fall over and die. And not only is she fighting, but they're giving her the toughest fight possible. So that's with what happened with Dos Anjos, the Holm Tate fight's really the main event on this card, and it's a really interesting fight. Tate's a really good wrestler, and she's not going to be a dummy like Rousey was and just try to stand up with Holm. So you'll know how that fight is going to go by where the fight is. If the fight's standing, Holm will pick her apart. It'll be similar to the Rousey fight. If Tate can keep it in the clinch and on the ground, I think she'll win. So I'm gonna pick Tate to win the fight.
Okay. Some of the other fights on that card. Gian, I wish D'Amato was here. He'd see me butcher these names. Gian Villante will take on, how's this guy's name? Ilir Laffiti? Ilir? Is that what that is? I-L-I-R?
You know, Scott, that is not one of the...
I picked like a low level thing, didn't I? Wow. Ilir Laffiti?
No, those are a couple of up and comers, but this is that. This card in general, I mean, there could be some other decent fights on the card, but it's really a very top-heavy card. If you're looking for other fights to watch on the card that could be interesting, Eric Silva is fighting. I believe that's the walkout bout in the prelims before the show goes to pay-per-view.
Mm.
Eric Silva is always very exciting.
He's fighting Nordine Taleb.
Yes.
Nordine Taleb.
I'm sorry. The illness is getting to me here. And then also Diego Sanchez and Jim Miller fights a little, you know, maybe a couple of years too late, but those are two guys that always bring it. And if you're looking for an undercard fight that could steal the show, that would be the one.
Diego Sanchez and Jim Miller. Okay. Anything else? March 5th. Well, there's KSW. They have there's a fight night. Let's see. The next fight night is March 19th. Yep, yeah. March 19th. And that main match, Frank Mir and Mark Hunt.
Yeah. I mean, this is the UFC version of Kimbo and Dada 5000.
Oh.
You know, both these guys are still serviceable, but they're both definitely blasts from the past. Neither one of them is really a threat to win the title. It should be a fun fight because both guys have real heavy hands. I like Hunt to knock Mir out because Hunt's real weakness is against guys who can take him down, and Mir can't do that. And Hunt's got like one of those guys where you got to hit him with a 2x4 to knock him out. So Mir's not like that. So he'll knock him out.
Mm. And then the next UFC pay-per-view 197 will be on April 23rd, and that's when my boy comes back.
Oh, man, he's a real class act, real solid guy, John
yep.
Jones.
Bones is back.
That's a great card, because the flyweight title fight on that card should be awesome, too.
Yes.
Mighty Mouse against Henry Cejudo, who is a real decorated Olympic wrestler who's, you know, waltzed through his first 10 fights. So that should be a great card. But Jones-Cormier, I have thoughts on that we'll save till before that fight. But
okay. Yeah, no, we're looking far ahead. That's April. That's not until April 23rd.
I think it could be a DC night that night, Scott. I think you might be singing the blues.
That's okay. It's quite all right.
It's tough to throw. You know, it's tough. I mean, Jones hasn't fought in a long time, and he's had all sorts of issues. It's tough to just throw him. I mean, no tune-up. Just throw him right back in there, right in there. And I know he beat him the first time, but I mean, Cormier's really, really, really good. And it's, I would have given him a tune-up first. Maybe he refused it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, there's our quick MMA snapshot as we look ahead. And of course, again, the big fight is this Saturday night out in Vegas. Cowboy, you did a fantastic job this evening. I know you are less than 100%, both physically and spiritually, after the Friars meltdown tonight. But thank you again. You're the best. Senior,
absolutely.
Get better.
You had a great time.
Get better, big man. When we return on our next show in a couple weeks, we'll have my brother on, big brother, Chris Criscolo. We'll talk more college hoops. And don't forget, I'm going to keep pumping the hell out of it. Sunday, March 28th is the Sports Evolution 2016 Major League Preview. We are going to jack that sucker up like crazy.
Be there or be square, baby.
That's right. Myself, Cowboy, Senior, the Doctor will return. Schmitty, Joel Barnhart, we're jacking that bitch up. We're talking all Royals, Mets, Cubs, Red Sox. Will the Cardinals suck? Yes. We'll talk who is going to win the AL East. Good boy, that thing's a big hot dumpster fire right now. God only knows who's that good in that division right now. Will the Blue Jays repeat? Are they still going to be a bunch of assholes? God only knows. Look forward to that on March 28th for the Cowboy. And we thank Grant Hughes as always. So for Grant and the Cowboy, I'm Scott. Stick with us. If you don't, pass you by. Have a good 2 weeks and enjoy UFC fight.
Your everlasting summer, you can see it fading fast. So you grab a piece of something that you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time. Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
You've been telling me you're a genius since you were 17. In all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. Weekend in the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Are you reeling in the years?
stowing away the time. Are you gathering up the keys? Have you had enough of mine?